Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
One of the challenge was just figuring out the right product. We invested a lot in software, technology. I mean, with Rarified, we spent millions of dollars on automations. If you're not proud of your job and what you do, maybe you should find yourself a different career. We just signed for our fourth location, which will be our largest, over 24,000 square feet. I think there's three ingredients to possible success. You know, there's no guarantee in business. Investment turned into a $1.2 million investment. It's really a $700 investment.
What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Having the courage to make a mistake, that's really critical. As long as your mistake is not like critical and catastrophic, it's okay.
So Bo, again, thank you for coming on.
Excited to come on. Yeah,
I appreciate the Praise Knowledge podcast for the second time. But so I appreciate it. So I got one question for you.
Sure.
Why Mango Space?
You know, I've always just enjoyed supporting entrepreneurs, small businesses, you know, and you know, this was a great platform for us to be able to support the local economy, and then we get just such a wide range of different small businesses, entrepreneur that we can support, give them a platform, an opportunity to hopefully build their business. Yeah.
So this is our second time having the conversation. I really appreciate you for your patience and understanding.
No problem.
And it's really understanding that as you're going through the journey, you're not going to have everything figured out.
Mm-hmm.
But when you figure everything out, everything starts to come together because you're figuring it out now.
Yeah.
When you start to put Mango Space together and community and build the community that you have now of local entrepreneurs, what was your biggest challenge in the beginning of the journey?
Yeah, I think when we first started Mango Space, one of the challenge was just figuring out the right product. You know, initially, we started out as more of a co-working space, had a lot of open space. We thought maybe we would offer desk memberships and things like that. And I don't know, maybe because of COVID, right? And after COVID, people just didn't want to sit next to each other. You know, maybe like Florida people are different. I think co-working did really well in New York and like maybe Atlanta. But I think where we are, people didn't really want to sit next to each other. They wanted more privacy, you know, and, you know, a lot of people are doing sales. They wanted like their own space, right? And I think also because we build this one person private office at a really reasonable price, because our co-working membership was like $250, $300, and then our private office is only like $500. So a lot of the people came to us, took the private office, you know, so we end up having to pivot. We actually reconstructed our layout at like 6 months, a year into it. And then we just built more offices where to kind of see what the market demand was, right? So initially, it's hard to predict what the market wants, you know? And then, you know, I mean, luckily we had the ability to easily pivot and did additional construction and reconfigure our building. Yeah.
And I like how, even though you've been in business longer than majority of people, well, just said me, you've been in business longer than me, you still have mishaps, you still have challenges, you still have moments where you have to pivot and change and adjust.
Yeah.
And what I learned is that just because you're in business or you've been in business for a long period of time, it doesn't mean that you don't have to change. It doesn't mean you have do not have to pivot, but it doesn't mean you have to adapt to your market.
Absolutely.
It seems like you have prior experience before the Mango Space, which was the Penguin insurance, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So before the Mango space, like, what was your the lessons that you learned from the Penguin insurance?
You know, running Penguin Insurance, you know, we grew it from one office to 125 offices in California, and we had over 80 employees in the Philippines, 35 in the US. We were in the insurance industry. So, like, the insurance industry, we had a lot of obstacles, right? Between regulatory obstacles from the government, just nature, right? Like, we're on natural disasters, like wildfires in California and things like that. You can't control. So we're just constantly have to adapt, and as the technology evolved too, right? So it's, you know, what we say, change is a constant. So unless we're always adapting, pivoting, and changing, we're going to get easily left behind by our competitor, right? So, you know, every single day we wake up, we're like, oh, what else can we do to, you know, to get better? Yeah, absolutely.
As I walk around the Mango space, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the walls, the pictures on the walls, sure. there, everybody that's in the office space of your community, mm-hmm. everyone is different, yet the community aspect is really important. Mm-hmm. On our first podcast, when the microphones went dead, sure. You mentioned that you was over, what did you say? You was helping too much, but you, the terminology you use, you say helping too much was, what was it?
I think because after selling Penguin Insurance, looking back, you know, we supported like 125 members. Mm-hmm. They're all entrepreneurs, right? And looking back after selling the company, we realized we like over-supported our members. Yeah. You know, which we overspent. And also, I think some of our member maybe didn't need as much hand-holding as we thought. Right. I guess that's my fault in a sense where we're so passionate about helping our members. You know, we might have overdid it in certain areas. Right. So I think it's a balance. Right. Because at the end of the day, we have to be physically responsible and maybe even allow some of them to make mistakes and, you know, and learn from their own mistakes. Yeah.
And don't
it's kind of like parenting a little bit, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
My wife and I don't have kids yet, but right. we have a dog.
Right.
And he just be all over the place doing any and everything.
Sure.
But as we're teaching him and training mm-hmm. him, there's some things that he has to learn on his own. Of right. course, like he go from learning how to be potty trained mm-hmm. and go to his cage and things yeah. of that nature. But giving people space to fail
right.
is the opportunity to grow.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Just like the name of your podcast, right? Yeah. No, you learn a lot more through failure than success. Yeah.
I agree. In fact, my recent failure was when I first had the conversation with you, and it was a great conversation. Right. I learned so much.
Yeah.
Then I happened to look to my left and I look at the microphone and it's off.
Right.
I'm like, I know I turned it on.
Yeah.
Oh, it went dead.
Yeah.
But the reason why, mm-hmm. because maybe I didn't charge it. Mm-hmm. Then I was only relying on one particular microphone.
Yeah.
Whereas now,
right,
we have two.
Yeah.
We have two.
So yeah, backup, redundancies. Yeah. No, I learned that in the Army.
What's called contingencies?
You have to have contingency plans. You have the backup for the backup. You know, double redundancies. Yeah.
So if you give people space to fail, you start to see their own development. You start to see their own growth and how they are growing to become a better business owner.
Yeah.
You mentioned that a lot of insurance agents was not great business owners.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of that. I see that now because now we're seeing other industry too, right? You know, we have over 117 company within Mango space. I see that, you know, throughout different industries as well, right? Whether it be doctors, chiropractors, insurance agent, a lot of them are very proficient technically in their trade, and they neglect, you know, to really develop their business skills. You know, which are very different than their technical skills, whether being good at a doctor or being good as an esthetician or therapist or insurance agent. You know, so for a business to be successful, they really need to be good at both. Yeah.
You just made me think about, have you ever read the book, The E-Myth Mastery or The E-Myth Revisited?
Yeah. I've heard of that book. Yeah. I mean, I've read the whole thing. I mean, yeah.
As you was explaining that, he explained that there's three things when it comes to have your own business: technician,
entrepreneur, mm-hmm. or technician, manager, and then entrepreneur.
Right.
So the phases of learning what you're doing mm-hmm. is the first part.
Right.
Now you have to be the manager of managing everything that you put into place.
Yeah. Right.
And then as you're managing everything to place, you go into entrepreneur. Now mm-hmm. you're managing the managers who right. managing the system.
Yeah.
You focus a lot on automations.
Right.
So that way you don't have to do everything. Mm-hmm. Yet when automations are in place, you don't have to do the same thing over right. and over and over again.
No, absolutely.
Automation is in place. In your previous company, Penguin Insurance, mm-hmm. you had a lot of automation that you was focused on.
Yeah, I know we did. We invested a lot in software, technology. I mean, we, matter of fact, we spent millions of dollars on automations. You know, and now looking back, we might have spent too much. Maybe there's just something you can over automate as well. Yeah. So we definitely did that. Yeah.
So with the automation at Mango Space, man, I'm pretty sure you still have the same concept mm-hmm. and level understanding with automation, but not too much automation,
right.
not overly support.
Sure.
But for the automation that's here at Mango Support, how does that help you all with the day-to-day business?
I think in the age of like AI, right, it's a fine balance, right? Because at the end of the day, a lot of businesses and consumers, they actually already getting a little worried of all this robots and AIs, right? People are like, well, I still want to talk to a human, you know, and business still comes down to relationships. So AI can't replace that relationship building, right? So I think the fine line is like, maybe use automations on things like reminding a client their appointment, you know, like reminding them to pay the bill or make it easier for them to pay the bill, right? When they come in the building, you know, things like, so there are certain things I think automation and AI is good, but at the same time, you know, a lot of consumers now are like, is the robot just talking to robots, right? Or I've actually got a phone call one day and like 30 seconds into the phone call, I'm like, are you a human or a robot? And then the AI was like, okay, you got me. I'm a robot. Right? Like, that's like, I don't know. Have you had that? Like, where a robot is calling you and you're like,
yes,
okay, this sounds like AI.
Yes,
right?
I have. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're in that fine balance where you want to automate things, but not lose a human touch.
And they say that AI is going to take your job.
Right.
Well, AI is going to take your job if you don't know how to use the AI that you have. Because there's a lot of AI software is
sure.
out there.
Yeah.
If you're not taking the time to learn how to use it, mm-hmm. it can replace you because you don't know how to. I'm sorry, the person who know how to use it can replace you because they put the time to understand it.
Right.
So with Mango Space, how do you, like your community that with the local businesses that are part of your community, mm-hmm. how do you teach them about automation?
You know, I one of the things that I've been talking to a lot of my member on, even beyond automation, like what I see a lot is like the fear of like hiring staff, you know, and learning how to leverage, right? Because like, for example, one of our member, Cindy, she's a great, you know, technician. She's really good at her job, right? And she does facials and she has clients on a 45-day waiting list. Like her calendar is booked out, like until like, December's booked out, January's booked out, you know, she's booking like February now. And, you know, one of the things I tell her, I say, look, you only one person. There's only like 24 hours a day. So in order for you to get to the next level, you have to bring other esthetician under your brand. But a lot of the good technician, their thing is that they're so prideful at their work and they resist like letting go. Right. They're afraid like, okay, well, if I bring one staff under my umbrella, what if they didn't do it right? They're going to ruin my brand. Right. So they have that fear. And I see that through insurance too. One of my best agents, his name is Sergio. He made $1 million his first year, brought in over 1,000 clients. And right away, I told him, I said, Sergio, you're awesome at what you're doing. You need to hire more people. You need to hire producers. You need to hire admin support. And all that, right? And, you know, but he wouldn't let go. So 5 years later, he was still making the same money. So his growth plateaued because he wouldn't let go and there was only one in it, right? So, you know, I explained to people, I said, look, even if you're the world's best surgeon, you can't increase your production, because you're only one person, right? So if I'm like, let's say, you know, I'm a hairdresser and I have like, I don't know, 1,000 barber that work for me. I can make more money than the world's most famous surgeon, right? Because now I leverage 1,000 people work as a team instead of just one person, right? So I think like leverage is a lot of where small business owner, it's a combination of automation and leverage, right? Where they don't quite understand. Also like as they ask staff, they don't quite understand, like, because we used to do this thing called time audit, where I audit my time for every 15 minutes throughout the day, or I have our producer do it, right? And then say, okay, well, for every minute that you're doing data entry, you're making $10 per hour, because I can hire someone in the Philippines to do that remotely for 10 bucks an hour, right? Maybe when you sell an insurance policy, building a relationship, you're making $300 per hour or $500 per hour. But you only do that 20% of the time. You see what I'm saying? So then maybe your blended average is you're making 80 bucks an hour. But you could be making $300 per hour all the time if you didn't have to do like data entry, right? And then I actually learned that through when I was at Farmers. One of our best agent, I forgot his name, but he was the top agent in all of California, right? So I went to visit him and see what his secret was, right? I went to his office, I visited offices, and then I was like, I think his name was Tom. I was like, Tom, what's your secret? How did you get to be number one in California? And it's a big state. I mean, we're talking about thousands of agents, right? He's like, look at my desk. I was like, there's nothing on your desk. He's like, that's part of the reason why I'm number one. He said he has not touched the computer for like 2 years. So he has two support staff that does all the data entry, all the computer work, all the booking. He says, I spend 90% of my time building relationships. So I spend all my time meeting people in person and talking to people on the phone. I don't touch the computer. I don't do any like processing, right? So I focus my time on being productive, right? So I think it's like, that's where people don't understand this concept called opportunity cost, right? How much of your time is spending doing revenue generating, you know, activity, high revenue generating activity, versus how much your time is doing, like, I don't know, admin, accounting, or whatever other work that could be done, or could be outsourced.
So you talk a lot about leverage.
Yeah.
And you talk about a lot of small entrepreneurs, small business owners, mm-hmm. they are the technician. They know right. how to do it. They're really good at focusing on doing the mm-hmm. best that they can do.
Right.
But now when you go to the manager part or the leadership mm-hmm. aspect of it, now you got to bring people in and start teaching them more about everything that you just
yeah.
discovered.
Yeah.
So I'm in business management because I'm in college for business management, they right. go over well.
Yeah.
When you're learning more about leadership, about management, about mm-hmm. how to lead, how to
yeah.
be a mentor, and things of that nature.
Right.
They inform you that when you bring people in, mm-hmm. you're teaching them. You have right. to lead them. You have to be the example of
sure.
this is how it's done.
Right.
This is why it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So when you develop your leadership skills back at Pingo Insurance right. and you transfer to Mango Space,
mm-hmm.
how did you know that, wait, you're a leader? You're a leader, not only you're leading yourself, but you're leading more people around you
mm-hmm.
and they're doing exactly what you are teaching them to do.
Well, I think it's just out of like necessity. And then no one's like born how to lead, right? And a lot of it's through practice, right? You know, initially I didn't know how to hire people, interview the right person. We just end up making a lot of mistakes. And, you know, once again, you learn from your mistakes, right? But like, I think a big part of it is also like leading by example. Your staff can see how passionate you are, right? When I was running Penguin Insurance, I was first person in the building and last person to leave every single day for probably the first 5 years, you know? So, and I tell my staff where, from a technical standpoint, I tell my staff, I can do, we had over 120 employees, right? And I tell them, I can do every one of your job, right? So I had to be technically sound. If my staff was not there, can I sit in their seat and do their job for a day, right? So I want to make sure I'm able to technically sound, be able to do almost all of my staff's jobs, right? For a day, you know, being technically sound, being passionate about your customers. And then I think like our support staff see that, and that's how we build that culture of like, hey, you know, our member, plus our member just not like regular customer, because we're B2B, right? So we're not like, okay, maybe somebody come in, buy a cup of coffee, you might never see them again. All of our customers, we work with them for years. We get to know their kids and their families, right? So it's that long-term relationship we have with our customers. And I tell my support staff, I said, look, in the insurance industry, there's only two kind of people. There's the people that sells insurance and the people who support people who sell insurance. And that's what we are, right? So we're the people that support people who sell insurance, right? And also like just having pride in your like work and industry, right? And when I bring, you know, I talk to a lot of new insurance agents, I say, raise your hand if your childhood dream was to become an insurance agent. They're like, no, nobody was. So then I'm like, but if you're not proud of your job and what you do, maybe you should find yourself a different career. You shouldn't be here, right? Like when I sold insurance, I'm proud of what I do. I knew like insurance, my mentor used to say, insurance is like the oil to the economy, right? Because without insurance, you can't get a loan. You can't open a business. Like transaction doesn't happen. So if the economy was an engine, then insurance is the oil to make the engine run. So without insurance, none of this stuff would happen, right? Like cars couldn't get bought, home wouldn't be sold, businesses wouldn't even open. Like the economy wouldn't function without insurance, right? So we play a very critical role in that economy, and you want to be proud of what you do, right? And for us to be able to support these agents and allow them to have their own business, allow them to succeed, right? I mean, we've taken people who are like working at a restaurant as a waiter and be able to make seven-figure income and, you know, have a good livelihood. And, you know, we played a part in that. Obviously, they did all the hard work, but we provide the infrastructure, the support and all that. So that's something we want to be proud of, you know? Yeah.
And I can definitely see the passion, because one, you understand, like, if you're not passionate, this is what you share with me. Mm-hmm. If you're not passionate about what you're doing,
right,
people don't feel that. People right. don't see that. And they can recognize, oh, this guy just in it for the money. This guy just in it for
yeah.
just trying to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, when people see your passion, they start to see why you're doing everything that you're doing.
Right.
So at Mango Space, your community is doing the same exact thing that you're doing, because mm-hmm. you are creating an environment for local business owners to come in one place and to collaborate, to partner, and mm-hmm. to really develop themselves.
Yeah.
That development might seem like over support,
mm-hmm.
but it's support enough so they can grow to become that business owner.
Right.
So as you are seeing your community mm-hmm. grow and develop, what are you most proud of when you recognize that they are actually growing into a business owner?
Well, just seeing like our small business owner come in, like we had businesses come in, have upgraded their office like 4 times in 6 months, right? We have the small one person office, which is $500 per month. So we have businesses come in. You know, I remember Melissa, one of our speech pathologists, she took our smallest like closet almost, right? Office, because she could only afford $500 per month at the time. And I said, Melissa, I was like, are you sure you can squeeze in a client, you and a client in this tiny one person office to do therapy? She's like, well, that's all I can afford. You know, I was like, okay, well, you know, we'll make it work. Right. So she started at this small, tiny one person office. And then she went to a 2-person office. And then she went to a 3-person office. Today, she took like one of my largest offices and then, you know, brought on staff and then grew from that. Right. So just to be able to see our member, and we even have a member that outgrow Mango Space altogether. We had another business that started with a 2-person, went to a 4-person, went to a 6-person, and now they need even a bigger building. It's like they graduated, you know, and then we had a, you know, farewell party, you know, and we send them off, right? And it's, think of it like they went to the Mango Space University and then now they graduated and they moved on. They've gone so big where they've outgrown like what Mango Space, you know, can offer, because now they needed their own building. Now they have their own building now. But it all started at Mango Space in a tiny little one-person office, right? So people provide that ecosystem, allow people to do that and blossom and grow and see them and be there, you know, and also be able to see like, hey, like our flower shop is like working with a therapist, and the therapist is working with a psychologist, and they're working with their concierge doctor, and be able to see like that ecosystem of business, be able to support each other and do business with each other, is really rewarding.
Wow. Wow. And I definitely see, especially walking around and just seeing the stories just on the wall, the stories just in the mm-hmm. offices. It's the community from the starting point, from the lunch pad. Then you start to lunch and grow. You start to see things mm-hmm. that wasn't there. Start to see your development. Mm-hmm. And when the Mango Space not only create the opportunity for others to grow, mm-hmm. but you are leading by example. Because y'all are working on developing a new facility, right?
Yeah.
Over there in, I don't know,
in West Shore, yeah.
West Shore, yep.
Yeah. So we just signed for our fourth location, which will be our largest, over 24,000 square feet. I think it's 4 minutes from the International Plaza and the International Airport. It'll be a new concept in Tampa Bay. It will have industrial like warehouse, micro warehouse that's ranging from 100 square feet to 500 square feet. But in the same location, it will have premium office space, as well as event space, conference rooms, content studio. We'll have some of our amazing amenity like full swing golf range and things like that. Want to bring like that in a new concept to Tampa.
1 second, hold on. About to turn it off and turn it back on. Okay. Of course, that one mentioned that. Okay. So you mentioned that you're building. So essentially, you outgrew one location mm-hmm. and then you outgrew another one.
Right.
Another. So not only when the people is coming in to launch their business, you are actually saying, hey, well, this is what we're doing. This is what we're working on.
Right.
This is what we're currently working on. And you're constantly growing and developing within yourself.
Right.
So that way, you're not just saying, hey, you should do this. Well, you should say, well, this is the example. Mm-hmm. This is the blueprint. And right. as you see the blueprint, if you have any questions and don't need the support, you're here to support them.
Right.
So you mentioned something about mentors. Why is it important to have the right mentor that will help you grow within your journey?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think in life in general, you have to have coaches and mentors, right? Because sometimes you just don't see the blind spot. Or maybe you haven't quite see like the vision, all right? And I think like from a mentor standpoint, I almost think it's better to have a mentor that's like maybe 2 to 3 years ahead of you. It's hard like for me, like let's say if I were to meet, I don't know, Elon Musk, right? He's about to be a trillion.
$600 billion.
Right, yeah, right? So it's almost like, I don't know, like his advice. I mean, obviously I listen to his vision and what he's doing and that, you know, I admire that, right? But maybe some of his like, you know, technique might not apply to me at my level. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So let's say if your company is making 10 million revenue, I want to talk to someone who's making $50 million in revenue. That's maybe 2 to 3 years, 5 years ahead of where I want to be. You know, I think like for myself, that's a better mentor because they were where I am like maybe 5 years ago. So I want to hear like, okay, well, how did you get from this level to this level, you know, in 5 years? Like what were you doing, right? And just finding mentors. And it doesn't even, I think sometimes have to be from the same industry because sometimes you get different perspective from just completely different industries. That look at a problem differently, you know? Yeah.
You just made me think about that same exact statement. Mm-hmm. So my professor, well, he's not actually my professor, mm-hmm. he's a professor in the university.
Yeah.
And he was telling me that he worked at a sales company and they did mm-hmm. X amount for right. a certain amount of time. He was like, if you ever want to take a sales director out, take mm-hmm. him to a coffee date. I said, don't tell me that.
Right.
I'm going to, he said, the offer's on the table.
Right.
So he was like, you have to be willing to learn from other people in different industries.
Right.
Not
right.
just your industry, but other people from different industries. I'm like, why? Because people have different perspectives.
Right.
Different industries do different things differently.
Yeah.
And when you see that, you start to understand what you can apply to your business.
Yeah.
And when you just said that, it made me understand that you just can't learn from one specific person, one specific group. You have to learn from everybody
diversify. Yeah.
You have to diversify.
Yeah. Like in the co-working business right now, like the hot new buzzword in our industry is hospitality.
Yeah.
So some of the best co-working space, they're not for learning from other co-working space. They're learning from like the hotel restaurant industry.
Oh.
You see anything? It's because the hotel restaurant industry has been in hospitality for a long time.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, who are the best hotels at customer service, making client feel, you know, welcome, you know, at home? And, you know, what are the best restaurants? Like, what are the restaurants are doing, right? So now like the co-working, like commercial real estate office industry is trying to transform itself to a hospitality business. So they almost need to look towards the hospitality sector and see like best practices, you know.
I've recently just read a book and it was called Unreasonable Hospitality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was an owner for the restaurants,
mm-hmm.
and he said he'd go to his competitors and mm-hmm. see what they're doing.
Right.
And he'd notice what they're not doing
mm-hmm.
and apply it to his business. And I was like, wait, can that be applied to the same thing I'm doing?
Right.
And that's when I start to understand about the automation, about the communication, about the aspect of mm-hmm. hospitality.
Right.
When I start to really implement it, mm-hmm. I saw the difference.
Because
now I'm only focusing on the customer's journey,
mm-hmm.
the customer experience, and
why
this is important and why that matters.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you step in, you see the hospitality.
Right.
You feel the experience. You feel the community.
Mm-hmm.
Was that intentional? Or was it like, we're going to try to see what works. And as you're seeing what's working, you're testing. You're constantly improving. Like,
well, it's a constant fine-tune process, right? Yeah. You know, and for me, like one of my big thing for me is to travel and eat really good food, you know, go visit some of the Michelin 2-3-star restaurants. Like a lot of people, they travel and then they eat when they're there. I like, specifically go to countries to eat at certain restaurants. That's one of my hobbies, you know? So, and you know, when you go dine at some of these Michelin 3-star restaurants, like it's like the whole experience, right? Like it's not just the food, like the presentation, the customer service, and, you know, and how they make you feel and all that. It's this entire experience, you know, like, I watched a video. There's this thing. You know, Japan has a lot of the Michelin star restaurants, right? And then in Japan, they have this concept. I think it's called Ichigo Ichimai or something like that. Like meaning, like the restaurant want to give you like a once in a lifetime experience, where like between the food, the service, and like the company you brought, right? Like maybe your best friend, your wife, or whoever that is that's there. The experience is so magical that such an event cannot be recreated ever again. Like they're saying, you can come back to the same restaurant with the same people, but it wouldn't be the same anymore because it's, you know, the first time was so magical, right? So I think that's like the highest level of like customer service. Can you create that experience where people will talk about it for years? Like, oh, like I was there at one time and then this is something that people remember, like in like a lifetime experience.
It just made me think about, so me and my wife and I, we went to Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go there, it's an experience.
Like, right.
Every time you experience something new, like
it's different.
Different.
Yeah.
It's different. But you just made me recognize the importance of, just because it's the experience is different today.
Yeah.
When you come back next time, it's going to be the same experience, but it's going to be a little bit different.
A little bit different. Yeah.
Because you're constantly improving
right.
on how to focus on your customers, on that hospitality part.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that it makes sense now. You're giving me a lot of epiphanies.
Yeah. That's
it's great. So I want to go off script. So let's say I'm new. Let's say I'm new and I just met Bo and I want to get into the co-working space, but I have no idea what to do.
Yeah.
How to go about getting a co-working space or should I even do this? What are three steps that I should take considering to get into the co-working space?
And I think we mentioned this last interview. For insurance, it's the same thing. You know, I look at a lot of the small business. I think there's three ingredients to like possible success. You know, there's no guarantee in business, right? I you know, because this is the thing that we see in insurance too. because we insure like restaurants and we insure like barbershops and all kinds of businesses, right? We have a lot of data. Like, for example, I think restaurants within the first 5 years, it's like a 85% failure rate. 85% of restaurants fail in within like the first 3 to 5 years, right? So the failure rate is like really, really high. So some of the, from our experience, some of the ingredients I tell my agent is like, one, you have to have, I mean, to start in, like an insurance business, for example, is it doesn't require like $1 million, right? It's low capital. But they don't realize you still have to have enough money where you can't expect to make any money in the first like year, right? You have to be able to reinvest. So the first question I ask my agent is like, well, how many months can you go without a paycheck? Are you prepared, you know, to go without a paycheck, right? On the co-working side, obviously, it's more expensive, right? Like to do, to sign a, you know, like typically we're signing a 10-year lease, and then to do renovation, you know, we're talking about millions of dollars to renovate, you know, a building, right? So it's definitely very heavy capital upfront. So you have to have some capital in order to get into the co-working business. So that's number one. Having the financial, the right amount of capital to get going, right? Like you have to have some sort of runway, you know, because things not going to work out. And then, you know, if things don't work out, how long can you last, right? If you had the right amount of capital to begin with, then I look at like, do you have unique enough of product, and do you have a solid marketing strategy to communicate that product? You know, do you have a USP, unique selling proposition, right? The same thing I tell my agent. There's like 70,000. Do you know that in California, there's 70,000 insurance agents?
No, I did not.
In auto home, you know, in my industry, there's 70,000 right. of them. So I said, well, what are you doing to distinguish yourself between you and the other 70,000 agents? Like, why should a customer buy from you? What makes you different, right? And once you figure out your USP, like, well, what's your plan? How do you like communicate that to the consumer, right? So you have to have a USP, and then you have to have a strategy of like, okay, well, how do I reach the market, right? Because otherwise, maybe you have a good USP, but like nobody knows about it, right? Then from there, I think you have to have some technical skills, obviously, since in the beginning, you don't have a lot of employees, right? So I've seen the situations where like the investor has a lot of money, a lot of resource, they have a great marketing plan, but they have no technical skills, right? And they say, oh, we'll just hire like somebody who's really good at doing insurance. I'm like, okay, well, what happens if that person quits, right? And how can you really manage someone doing something that you have no knowledge of, right? So it's difficult, like for me, like to manage someone like in an industry that I know nothing about, right? So I believe like the founder have to have some like technical skill in that industry too, you know, to at least to lead the people that they're going to hire, right? So I think between some initial technical skill, solid like product and marketing strategy, and some financial backing, those are like the three ingredients for potential success.
So I need to have finances. I need to have capital.
I
have to know what I'm doing for that. And then I have to have the unique selling proposition. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
This conversation today is a lot different than the first one because you're speaking from experience, but I think this conversation is a lot different than the first one because now everything is making a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Because you can only manage what you know how to manage.
Right.
Whereas if you try to go out and manage something that you don't know how to,
right.
You're kind of hoping for the best.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing with hiring. If you're looking to hire somebody, because I know when I had my first employee, I was teaching them about how to do podcasting, how to post,
right.
How to be consistent, how to do a thumbnail.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize that's a form of management. This is something that I learned how to do.
Sure.
The technical aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But now when somebody come in, it's like, well, this is how you're doing it. And that's a form of leadership,
right?
You're helping your leaders, your previous agents, now the local business owners about leadership,
right?
You lead yourself first, and then once you lead yourself, you teach others how to lead themselves as well.
Yeah.
Did I understand it right?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. No, you summed that pretty good. Yeah.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people are afraid, like you mentioned earlier, to lead others because what if it goes wrong?
Yeah, it's just a lot of fear in general, right? I think, but then like, I think the biggest mistake is to not even try, right? How do you know, right? Like I was, we were last night, we were talking about my friend that he went to law school for like 4 years, but then he was afraid he's not going to pass the bar test. But I'm like, well, you haven't even taken a test. How do you know you're going to pass the test, right? Well, I know how you're not going to pass the test by not taking the test, right? So, you know, I think that's human nature, right? We have to help our small entrepreneur overcome that fear, you know, of like hiring the first person, you know, and who should you hire, right? That's just so scary. Like, you know, like, what if they don't do as good a job as mine, right? I remember this is the conversation I had with my agent. Because we're pretty good at outsourcing, right? We had our service center in the Philippines for like 5 years. We had over 80 employees over there. So I said, you know, maybe you can't afford a U.S. staff, but let's start, you know, overseas, right? It's a lot cheaper and you don't have as much of the HR complexity in the Philippines. So they took my advice, right? His name is Rob. So he took my advice. He hired overseas staff. 30 days later, I went to check on Rob. I was like, okay, well, how did that go? He's like, it's terrible. Your worst advice ever, right? I was like, well, tell me, like, why is it so terrible? He's like, well, the person that I hire does everything twice as long as I do, right? I said, okay. I said, well, if this person was in the United States, right? And I said, Rob, think back when you first started in your job, your first 30 days, were you as fast at doing what you were today? Like, when you first started doing what you're doing, it's like, okay, you have a point. Maybe I wasn't as fast either in my first day on the job, right? I was like, yeah. And I said, let me ask you this other question, Rob. I was like, okay, when you sell an insurance policy, you're making, let's say, $300 per hour, right? Mm-hmm. So you're telling me your staff took twice as long and you pay your staff $10 per hour, right? So you're telling me you'd rather make $20 per hour than? He's like, I didn't think about it like that. I was like, yeah, I mean, sure, it took him twice as long, but you're only paying them $10 per hour. So if it took you twice as long to do the same work, then you're paying $20 per hour. So you don't really want to make $20 per hour either, right? He's like, no. So I said, that's just part of their learning curve, right? And you have to let your staff, you know, you have to spend time training, mentoring them to get them to hopefully one day to do maybe not 100% of you, maybe one day in 6 months, a year, they could do 70% of what you do, right? But they'd be doing it at $10 per hour so that you can take your time to do more important things. So that's where like people are like, oh, okay, maybe they don't need to be perfect. Maybe they don't need to be as fast as I am, right? It's like, but most entrepreneurs have that perfectionist, like everything has to go right. Everything has to be exactly what I'm doing, and they don't realize that it doesn't have to be like that.
That's one thing that I learned, because I was working with the woman I was working with. She was from the Philippines, if mm-hmm. I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
And as I was working with her, like she would do everything with the YouTube and right. with the thumbnails, the description, yeah. and then uploading on mm-hmm. social media. It was very, very like what did you say earlier? Leverage. Mm-hmm. It was very like I don't have to focus on these right. and go build the relationships.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about leverage. Nature. Yeah.
And so when I stopped working with her, because I wasn't bringing in enough clients, mm-hmm. or I didn't understand the business, how mm-hmm. to make money from what I was doing.
Right.
It got expensive. So I was like, well, I'm mm-hmm. going to have to, you know, stop working with
Let
you
her go. Because yeah, yeah.
I don't have the budget for
yeah.
it. So a couple months passed by mm-hmm. and she still had access to my YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, account. Some of your platforms. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I got an email from YouTube mm-hmm. and it said that your YouTube has been compromised mm-hmm. and we're moving it from the platform.
Right, right.
I was like, for what? I didn't even know right, this. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they proceeded to say that, well, is this the person that was on your profile?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I gave her access.
Right, right, right.
You know, she had sure. access.
Right.
And it was like, well, unfortunately, her mm-hmm. email mm-hmm. got compromised. And when it got compromised, people was uploading different things on there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we have to remove your YouTube.
Right, right, right.
I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Think about the amount of time and effort that went into building it.
Yeah, yeah,
I built
yeah,
over like
yeah.
890 right. podcast episodes.
Yeah.
And nonetheless, it was like, well,
to get the entire channel removed.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
now
yeah.
I have to start over.
Yeah.
But it wasn't me starting over from level one. Mm-hmm. Well, I have the experience, understanding right, behind everything.
Sure.
biggest takeaway that I took from that was that if you're not working with that person, remove the access.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's part of the challenge. We're working with, whether it's U.S. employee or overseas employee, right? Like, they basically represent your company.
Yeah.
Right? So you know, they say your team is only good as weakest link. So when they're out there communicating with your customer, representing you, you know, that's you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was me.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I learned that because,
right.
You know, there's a lot of books and information and knowledge out there.
True.
But for me to go through that
personal experience that,
that can't be taught. That can't be,
no.
Can't be explained. Well, you have to look out for this. It can be taught depending on the right mentor.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have to look out for certain aspects of your business as you're growing and developing and whatnot.
Sure.
Because you never know what can happen.
Yeah.
But when it happens, you better learn from it.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't think I asked you this in this conversation, but what has been your biggest failure so far while operating the Mango space?
I think the biggest failure is, you know, we mentioned on the product design, you know, we made a lot of assumptions that it turned out not to be true, right? And two, some of my failure, I think, in the initial business that we're changing our strategy now, back when I ran Penguin, was that I didn't leverage enough, right? Because growing up being Chinese and like our culture, people didn't borrow money, right? People didn't take out loans. I bought my first car cash. So the way we did it, we just save up until you had enough money to buy a car, and then you went to buy a car, right? So that was kind of like how we grew up. You know, so when we ran Penguin Insurance, we didn't borrow a single dime to grow from one location to 125 locations. We just literally bootstrapped and waited until we had more revenue and then scaled, right? So now running Mango Space, I see our mistake now was we could easily reach out to the bank and, you know, had investors and scale a lot faster, maybe 5-10 times faster in the 8 years I ran Penguin Insurance and had a lot of bigger company. But, you know, whether we were just not used to it, we're too scared, we didn't leverage, right? So that's what I learned now, like coming back, selling the company. I think like healthy amount of leverage, right? Obviously I'm not advocating just go borrow money for the sake of borrowing money, right? But I realized in order to succeed, you have to be able to leverage. Like earlier, we're talking about leverage other people's time and resource, but also leveraging money, right? Financial resources, right? So that's like a super boost to get you to the next level. So you have to have a healthy amount of leverage in finance as well as staffing, other people's money, other people's time.
Oh, as I was learning about real estate, because a half a decade ago when I was in the Marine Corps, I was learning how to do real estate wholesaling.
Right.
And I was doing it for like 18 to 24 months.
Sure.
And the time span, I only closed one deal, one transaction.
Yeah.
But the whole process of using other people's time, other people's money, other people's like leverage.
It's critical building wealth.
Oh,
I'm
learning that now. Because in 2022, I had got four credit cards.
Yeah.
This is not financial advice. This is my experience. But I got four credit cards with American Express. One was the gold, one was the platinum, one was the plum, one was the green. And at the time, I was like, well, I don't understand the business that I'm in.
Right.
That credit and the money is good. Because they are people online and people, entrepreneurs say, get the money before you need it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the money before I need it.
Right,
so I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing, what I need to do, and how to go about, you know, potentially making money from it.
Yeah, yeah.
What I didn't recognize is that I didn't read that fine print.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later passed, and I got hit with the annual fee for all four cards.
Right.
And I was using two of the four cards. Nonetheless, I didn't understand like the importance of leverage and using money, other people's time.
Responsibly.
Responsibly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, like some basic, like being in the military, both of us, right? Like the VA loan.
Yeah.
Right? Like how many people, a lot of the veterans don't realize they could buy their first home with zero down with the VA loan. That's like really powerful. Right? Like I bought my first house, I remember back in 2017, 2017, zero down. I bought my first home at that time. After the VA loan, I think I paid a total of $700 for a home that was in San Jose, California, that was $355,000. And then in 2022, I sold that home for $1.2 million. So you That's do the math. Crazy. So your gain is not $300,000. So you don't really understand, right? It's not $300,000, you know, like investment turned into a $1.2 million investment. It's really a $700 investment. So I don't know how many X that is, right? That turned into a $1.2 million investment.
I got a similar, so not necessarily 1.2, but we bought the house during COVID in 2020.
Right.
And it's for $290,000.
Yeah.
And 2 years passed, 2022, mm-hmm. we sold the house for $375,000 or $390,000 because we
With the VA loan?
With the VA loan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So zero down. Yeah.
Zero down. Didn't have to put no money. Didn't have to put 10% down at closing. Didn't have to do none of that. We came in with nothing. Of course, you got to pay.
Right. Yeah.
As it's going down, when you sell it, we sold the house for $100K more.
Yeah.
And it was like,
right.
We didn't even do anything.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Maybe we bought it at a good time. It was like, we didn't even do anything.
So that's leverage, you know?
Oh, that is leverage.
Right.
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't even
think about that. Well, yeah, because you don't think about like the home going up 100. It's more like, well, you didn't put any down, so maybe you just pay a couple $100 in fees, right? And that was it.
And then we get that money back.
Well, I know. With the VA.
So you
get your entitlement back. You can do it again. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Maybe you understand more about leverage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay. Yeah.
But so, like in the co-working business, it's just like that, but the like same, on a bigger level. Yeah.
On a bigger level. Yeah. But you can't use the VA loan with the co-working space, right?
No, you can't use the VA loan on a commercial building. But I mean, like the concept is the same.
The concept is the same.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so
Because like, let's say I could buy a building, you know, let's say I buy a $10 million building cash. And if that building went from $10 million to $15 million in 10 years, I made $5 million.
Plus the equity that you're paying down.
Right.
So.
But if I borrow the money, maybe I could buy a $10 million with $2 million down.
But you get it back. Oh, you man. See what I'm
saying? So then when it goes up to $15 million, it's not a 50% increase.
It's more.
Now it's a 250% increase, right? Because now my $2 million investment is returning me $7 million now.
Your $2 million turned to $15.
Yeah.
And then you get the $2 million back.
Right, yeah.
Plus all the fees.
Right. So that's leverage. Yeah. So that was my first mistake in the previous company was we just grew. That's where I think like that's the other thing where people's time, right? I read some other books where it's like, how many percent of your time is working in the business instead of working on the business, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't spend enough time to take a step back and say, hey, you know, maybe I should be doing this. Maybe I should be leveraging more, right? So that's how I find out. Am I leveraging enough? I'm not leveraging, you know, too much, right?
It's like a balance.
Yeah.
It's a balance.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got one last segment and it's called Best for Last. And I ask you four questions. And you're answering 30 seconds.
Sure.
Ready?
Yeah.
So first question, what are you grateful for?
Yeah, I'm just grateful having the opportunity to immigrate to the United States, right? I could, you know, if my parent didn't take the hardship of immigrating here in 1995, and, you know, who knows? My life might be completely different. I mean, maybe not had the opportunity to open my own company, three company now, you know, and all that. And just to be able to give my children hopefully even better opportunity. So I'm definitely grateful for the way you can say the American dream, right?
I forgot all about the immigration. I forgot all about that one. Next question, do you have any regrets?
Regrets in general in life or
in general?
No, I don't think I live my life in regrets. It's more of like lessons. You know, I think like everything, all the mistakes we made in the past are just lessons that, you know, that you learn. Otherwise, they become, you know, they become free mistakes, right? So I want to make sure if I make a mistake, I learn the lesson and apply to future businesses. Yeah, I mean, next session, I can tell you, we made some mistakes where it cost us millions of dollars, right? Easily. Okay.
And speaking of lessons, what was your biggest lesson while being the president of Mango Space?
Biggest lesson from being president of Mango Space is never make any assumptions, you know? Yeah, because I think when I first started this company, I had a lot of ideas how this would turn out, you know? And, you know, like, for example, we build a bunch of these like little offices for whatever reason, right? That I thought was going to be the most difficult product to sell, and then being our best selling product, right? So like, you know, a lot, you have to, obviously you have to make educated guess. It's not like going to casino and gamble, right? We make educated guess. And then when things don't turn out, you have to adapt and pivot and don't let your previous assumption like hold you back from making changes.
I agree. Hold on for the last question. I got to turn them off and turn it back on. Okay. Last question. What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Yeah, I think that's the theme of the whole podcast today, right? It's just some of the mistakes, I think I realize you can't learn that in a school environment, an MBA, or even from a mentor, right? You know, and the same thing with raising my kids too. I tell them, these are all the things that you should be doing because I've gone through and I've done it. And guess what? They're going to have to go do it themselves. You know, they can't, you know, maybe you can shorten someone's learning curve by mentoring them, but a lot of the mistakes, you know, you have to make it on your own, right? So I think at the end of the day is having the courage to make a mistake. That's really critical. As long as your mistake is not like critical and catastrophic, you know, it's okay, right? So it's, I think my lesson is it's okay to make mistakes.
I definitely agree, Bo. This has been great for the second time. So how can people learn more about Mango Space? How can they learn more about you, Bo? And how can they learn about everything that y'all doing?
Yeah, I mean, you can check out our website, mangospace.com. You know, we are on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn pretty actively posting things like that. Yeah. And, you know, anybody that are interested to learn more about our project can visit our website, reach out to me directly. Yeah.
But again, thank you for coming on to the Face Knowledge Podcast. Yeah. What was your biggest takeaway while being on the podcast for the second time?
I think it's just, you know, if anything, the podcast interview helped me reflect on some of my experiences. Yeah. And really to, and maybe document some of it. Maybe one day my children, when they grow up, they can watch this, you know? So I think it was awesome. Yeah. It was a really good experience.
I appreciate that. Then last question. For someone that's hesitant to come onto the Phase Knowledge Podcast, what is one piece of advice that you can give them?
I'm like, what's the worst gonna happen? Make fun of yourself? No, you know? So I think, I think it's like anything, you want to, you know, get yourself out there and you know, I highly recommend it. I think,
I appreciate
the same thing with the theme of not worry about failing, you know? Yeah.